On the Sunday night meeting, we are in the part of the big book. We're ready to start how it works. We're going to look at the preamble in great detail. We're going to go through the three pages on how it works that are read at every meeting and really look at it and see what it's really telling us and see if we can gain some new insights. I think you'll find it really helpful. But first, I thought this is a good time to do the Hand of God, the AA history, and how everything came together so that there was a night when Bill W. was writing How It Works in 1938, and we have the book today. And I call this the Hand of God. Sandy Beach refers it as the Hand of God, how people came together so that all this came to be. And it involved Frank Buckman, the founder of the Oxford Group. Excuse me, Reverend Shoemaker, who became head of the Calvary Church in New York, where Roland Hazard came after he saw Dr. Young, and that's described on page 25. Abby Thatcher went to Bill W. in 1934, and Bill W. went to Dr. Bob, and we're here today. And I'm going to start with the Oxford Group because it doesn't really get as much play. And new people now have no idea about the Oxford Group, but the Oxford Group was really instrumental in us being sober today and having the AA 12 steps in the program of recovery. The Oxford Group was started by Frank Buckman in 1909. He was a young Protestant minister, Quaker minister, actually, from Pennsylvania. He was trying to help in a church, and the people in the church didn't like his ideas and the way he was doing things. He got very upset, and he left the church. He was very angry, and he went to England. He went to a church in England on a Sunday, and the sermon was on resentment by a woman preacher. And when he was sitting there, the cross became an eye, and he realized that he was the cause of his problems, not them, and resentments was the major cause of his problems from his self-centeredness and his separation from God. And then he had a spiritual, what he called a guidance from God, to start the Oxford Group. And the Oxford Group is named Oxford, not after Oxford, England, but in 1928. The group started in 1909. But in 1928, a group of students from Oxford was in South Africa, and somebody named it the Oxford Group. The Oxford Group was a spiritual movement to recapture the power of first century Christianity in the modern world. Their thought was change one man, change the world. The members sought to achieve spiritual regeneration by making a surrender to God. That's the central part of our recovery program. They had a thorough, rigorous self-examination, which is our steps 4 and 5. The confession, which is step 5. The character defects, which is 6 and 7, making restitutions for harm done, which is 8 and 9, and giving without thought or reward, which is our step 10. They had a slogan, no pay for soul surgery. And there was a tremendous emphasis on restitution and on witnessing. They were seeking to give control of their life to God, to live a spiritual life with God's guidance. Eventually, they had a slogan, change one man, change one nation, change the world. There was an emphasis placed on prayer and on seeking guidance from God in all matters, which is similar to our steps 3 and 11, and practicing the principles in all our affairs. They had a moment of silence at the beginning of their meetings in which they would ask God to come in and guide their thinking. They relied on the study of the scriptures, and they had some of their own literature If you look on, there's a website, Barefoot Bill's website, which is excellent. He has about the big book, the books that were used to write the big book. And there is a book they use called The Oxford Movement by someone called Anonymous. And then you can see the books and several of the books that were instrumental in the information in our big book were from the Oxford group. But the core of the Oxford group was the four absolutes: absolute honesty, absolute unselfishness, absolute purity, and absolute love. And the absolute honesty was the honest, their motives. What were their motives? Were they honest with their motives? Were they honest in all their affairs? Were they honest with themselves? Unselfishness, doing for others, getting out of self. Purity, absolute purity. They were talking about their motives. Were their thoughts of others or of themselves? Love, they were talking about forgiveness, tolerance, consideration. They had a personal inventory based on the four absolutes, and that was published by the Cleveland AA group in 1939. Clarence Smith started that group. He was had gone to the Oxford group with Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob had been his sponsor. He formed the AA group in Cleveland, which was the first group to take the name Alcoholics Anonymous after the name of the book. Dr. Bob, in 1948, at a talk you can listen to on Recovery Audio, recalled that the absolutes were the only yardstick AA had in the early days before the 12 steps. He said, almost always, if I measure my decision carefully by the yardsticks of the four absolutes and it checks up pretty well with these four, then my answer can't be very far out of the way. Essentially, carry a vision of God's will in all my affairs. Carry the four absolutes. Ask yourself how they play in all of your thinking and decisions. They're still widely quoted at AA meetings in Akron and Cleveland. They used to be on the walls. There was a book on the four absolutes published by the Cleveland group, and they had a inventory program on based on this four absolutes that I'm going to try to find and see if I can put it on the site. And apparently it was a very good way to do inventory. The Oxford group also had what was called the five C's and the five procedures. The five C's were confidence, confession, conviction, conversion, and continuance. The five procedures were: one, give in to God, listen to God's direction, check guidance, restitution, and sharing, wit for witness and for confession. So the five procedures, confidence in God, confession to God, conviction in God's plan, conversion to God's will, and continuance in their seeking God's will. And the five procedures were similar to this, or became incorporated into the steps: give in to God, listen to God's direction, prayer and meditation, check guidance, using the absolutes, restitution, making amends, and sharing for witness and for confession. They would share at their meeting, and the sharing was they were supposed to talk about how their lives had changed through their working of their steps and principles. And someone made the point that a lot of our meetings, our speaker meetings, are drunkalogues, and then the person will say, and I've been sober 8 years and I went to AA and worked the steps. But what they were interested in the Oxford group is not what they were like before they were changed, but what happened, how the change took place in them, what they did, and what they were like now. And if you look on page, I believe it's 28 or 29, it says our stories are really to be on how we established our relationship with God. Each man his own point of view tells of how he established his relationship with God, and that's what it's all about. At the meeting, they would share how they're using the four C's, how they're using the five C's to bring about guidance and change in their lives, and how they were using the five procedures to grow spiritually in God's, in the image of God. they really believed in quiet time. They would have quiet time at the meetings. They would read a scripture. They would have quiet time where people were supposed to meditate on it. And then when the quiet time was over, they would write what guidance they had been given during their meditation. Then they would share it with each other, the guidance that they received. Slogans used by the Oxford group are study men, not books. Win your argument, lose your man. Give news, not views. And they would ask each other, are you maintaining? Maintaining meaning, are you doing the deal? Are you maintaining your contact with God? And if you look, it says we have a daily reprieve based upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. They use that word from the Oxford group. And they said they're not here to please ourselves, but we're here to please God. And that's the basic message in our 12 steps. And they had a spiritual solution to the things which have prevented them from conscious contact with God. And the Oxford group became fairly prominent. Was it a widely known group, but they had Oxford groups in New York. They had them in the East Coast. They had some in Europe. Frank Buckland was the founder. He was instrumental. Apparently he was a very powerful man in terms of his presentation and the way he carried himself. He met Reverend Shoemaker in 1924 in China. And Reverend Shoemaker was a young missionary there, and he was having a lot of trouble carrying his message. And he met Frank Buckman. They spent a lot of time together. He became part of the Oxford group, and he eventually brought the Oxford group to New York to the Calvary Church. You'll recall that the Calvary Church is where Roland Hazard, who's described in page 25, he was the young businessman who went for a year with Dr. Young, and it's in our big book, and there's a solution. And Roland Hazard is the one that Dr. Young gave the solution to our problem, the spiritual solution. He told Roland Hazard, "You have the mind of an alcoholic. I've never seen a single patient recover with a mind such as yours, except," and this is where God made his move. He sent Roland to a man who realized he didn't have all the answers, that the analytical psychiatric modality was not the answer to everything, and that there were these spiritual phenomena he talked about where people had a total rearrangement of their personalities, their ideas and attitudes and emotions. You can read that in the "In There Is a Solution," on I believe page 26 or 27. And then Roland Hazard said, "Well, do I need religion?" He said, "No, you need a spiritual transformation. We're not talking about church." And he went back to New York, and he met Reverend Shoemaker, and he went to the Oxford group, and he sobered up. Now, around that time, the Oxford group sobered up Henry Firestone's son from the Firestone Rubber Company in Akron, Ohio. And he was really impressed, Henry Firestone, with this group. So he brought the leaders to Akron for a 10-day series of meetings. And this started the Oxford group meetings. And Ann Smith went to these meetings with Henrietta Seiberling and eventually Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob was exposed to the Oxford group around 1932 or 3, the same time that Roland Hazard went to the Calvary Church in New York and was exposed to the Oxford group. And Dr. Bob had commented in his writings that he liked the Oxford group because the members seemed to be at ease and happy. And he said that they have something I don't have, and they have something I want. And that's become something that's commonly said at AA meetings. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, that's read at every meeting. And So he went to the West Hall group, and Smith and Henrietta Cybrewing attended. Ann Smith was his wife. Now, Henrietta Cybrewing, you'll recall, and we'll talk about in a little bit further, was the one that Bill W. called in the Mayflower Hotel in 1935 when he realized he had to talk to another alcoholic. He was given Henrietta Cybrewing's name, and she arranged for him to see Dr. Bob, which we'll talk about more in a few minutes. So you see how they all came together. Ann Smith brought Bob. Bob Smith went to the meetings. Henrietta Cybrewing was there. The Oxford group came to Akron. Dr. Bob actually went to the Oxford group for 2.5 years. He said he attended meetings. He went to church. He read all their literature. He prayed. He studied its philosophy, and he did everything he could, but he couldn't stay sober. He still got drunk. Now, Ann Cybrewing was the daughter-in-law of Frank Cybrewing, who was the founder and first president of Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company. So we have Firestone and the Goodyear Tire Company instrumental in AA's history. And she lived on the property, the Goodyear property. And in 1935, she and several other people got together with Ann Smith, and they discussed what to do with Dr. Bob. They knew his life was a mess. They knew he had a problem with alcohol. He was facing bankruptcy. His medical practice was in disarray. They asked for guidance, and they met a couple, T. Henry and Clarice Williams, and they met in their house, and they set up a special meeting to discuss what to do with Dr. Bob. And this is the group of people that started the first AA meetings. They were held in T. Henry and Clarice Williams' house. After Dr. Bob and Bill got together, they brought their first few members to that meetings. That's where the Akron group started. They knew Bob was a heavy drinker and was about to lose everything. And they felt Dr. Bob needed to lose his pride. He would have trouble sharing at the meetings. And they felt if he could be honest about what was happening in his life, it would be the beginning. I remember they talked about absolute honesty as one of the tenets of the Oxford group. And it says we have to constitutionally capable of being honest with ourselves, and then we have to be honest with another human being. In step 5, it says if we're to be successful in the program of recovery. And he finally, at a meeting, said, I'm going to tell you something which may cost me my profession. This was just several weeks before Bill W. came into his life. And he admitted, he says, I'm a secret drinker and I can't stop. And they asked to pray for him, and they all got down on their knees with him and prayed for him. Henrietta Cybrewing went home, and in her quiet time the next morning, she prayed for Dr. Bob, and she said that she said to God, I don't know anything about drinking, but I told Bob that I that if he would live the spiritual life outlined in the Oxford group, he could quit drinking. And he says, I need your help, God. She prayed to God, I need your help. And the guidance she got from her from God was that Bob must not touch a drop of alcohol. She got the guidance to help Bob, prayed for him, and she called Dr. Bob and said she had guidance for him and shared all that. And he told her he wanted to stop, but he couldn't do so. He said he was one of those people who wanted to quit but couldn't. And he was one of those people that wanted it but couldn't get it. And this was shortly before Bill W. came to Akron. And Dr. Bob also commented that if you listen to his talks, which I have, he said in the beginning their stories didn't amount to anything to speak of, but they were convinced that the answers to their problem was in the good book. So after he met Bill W. in early AA, they studied the scriptures. And they found, they studied especially the Sermon on the Mount, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and the book of James. And those were the instrumental in their, that's what they studied. That was the path before they wrote the big book. And he called AA's, the early time of AA, the flying blind time. They read the Bible, they had the precepts of the officer group, and they were actually working the steps, the program of recovery, but they didn't have it in writing. So Dr. Bob was dying of alcoholism. He was losing everything. This is May of 1935. And Bill's story we've gone through on the podcast. It's in the big book. Bill W. was dying. He was hopeless. He had completely been defeated by alcohol in 1934. In November 1934, Bill W. is sitting in his kitchen, and he says he's had enough gin to get through the day, and then his friend Ebbie Thatcher called and said he'd like to talk to him. Now, the hand of God is that Bill W. and Roland Hazard and Ebbie Thatcher were all teenage friends in Vermont. They all spent their summers together. Roland Hazard and Ebbie Thatcher were from wealthy families. Bill was not. They had summer homes on this lake in Vermont. Bill lived nearby. They would get together. Ann Smith at that time was a teenage girl. She and her family had a home there as well, and they all knew each other. Then Rowan Hazard, of course, went to Dr. Young, came back, was in the Oxford group. He had a best friend in the Oxford group named C. Harve Graves. It's a weird name. And this man's father was a judge in Vermont. Ebbie Thatcher had been sent by his family. They were a prominent family in Albany, New York, to go to Vermont. They sent him there to live in their summer home. They couldn't have him around. He couldn't stop drinking. His life was a mess. In Vermont, he did two things that bothered the judge. He drove into some lady's living room, drove into her house and asked for a cup of coffee, and then he tried to paint, he was going to paint his house, and the birds interfered with his painting, and he got a shotgun and shot up the neighborhood. So he was arrested, jailed, and the judge was going to send him to an asylum. That's what they did in alcoholics those days. They just locked them up to keep them from hurting themselves and others. Roland Hazard and his friend heard about this. They went up to Vermont. They asked the judge if they would be allowed to take Ebbie Thatcher to the Calvary Church, to the Oxford group, and see if they could he could be helped. The judge says, do anything you want with him, but take him out of the state of Vermont. Don't bring him back. So Ebbie Thatcher went, 1934, to the Calvary Church. He sobered up for 60 days, and they told him that he had to witness as part of his Oxford group experience, and he had to witness and share with someone, and he thought Bill W. would be the perfect person to witness, and he went to Bill W. in November 1934, and you recall that he told him about the spiritual program, the program of action. Bill fought the idea of God. They discussed it. Bill finally realized that who was he to say that there was no God and that he could have his own conception of God. And eventually Bill worked the steps in the hospital with Ebbie Thatcher. Bill W. called Ebbie Thatcher his sponsor. Ebbie, unfortunately, had problems staying sober throughout his life, but he did have periods of sobriety. And you can listen to him talk, and it's in recovery audio and in stories of recovery. Ebbie went to Bill. Bill then sobered up. He had 6 months in New York where he wasn't able to help a single person. Remember, they all got drunk, and he was very discouraged. He said to his wife, Lois, he said, Lois, I haven't been able to help a single person. But she says, but Bill, you're sober, and it's helped you. So that was where he got the idea that one alcoholic working with another, it could help keep him sober. He also went to the doctor who had given him the described his problem, Dr. Silkworth, and Dr. Silkworth said, well, he asked Dr. Silkworth why he wasn't being able to help anybody, and Dr. Silkworth said, because you're preaching to them, preaching about your spiritual transformation, your change. What you need to do is talk to them about your experience as an alcoholic, how you thought, how you acted, how alcoholic affected you. Tell them about the obsession of the mind, the allergy of the body, and then talk about the spiritual solution. And so he had that information when he went in May of 1935. Bill had been a successful investment person, no longer successful at that point, but he had put together a group to take over a company, and they were in Akron to have that happen. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. The deal fell through. Bill was almost out of money, didn't know how he was going to pay this hotel bill. He was crushed. He was defeated. And since he wasn't in good emotional shape, he had this brilliant idea that he would go to the bar and listen to music. And so this was the state of mind of Bill W. in 1935 on May 11th. And he went down to the lobby and he started to go into the bar. And here's where God made his move and decided that alcoholics didn't have to die anymore, that he would give his message to the world, God's message, the principles in the big book, so that we could recover and that we could help each other and eventually give his principles back to the world. That's what I believe. And so the thought, he says, the thought came into my mind suddenly. Remember it says in the promises, suddenly we realize that God could do for us what we could not do for ourselves. And suddenly the thought came into Bill W.'s mind, I need to find another alcoholic to talk to. My solution is not to go into the bar. Now, Bill W. didn't have that thought from himself. That came from God. And it came because he had tried so hard to be connected to God, tried so hard that he had brought a relationship to God into his life, and that when he was there ready to turn to an insane behavior, God said, no, turn away from that and come with me and let's find someone to talk to. So he went to the lobby, found the phone, numbers, there was a church directory. He finally found Reverend Thunk. Reverend Thunk had actually gone to the Oxford group. He knew Henrietta Seiberling. He called her. Bill called her and asked Henrietta if she had anybody that he said, I'm from the Oxford group in New York and I'm a rum hound. Is there someone I can talk to? And she had just been praying for Dr. Bob. They just had their special meetings. They were meeting in T. Henry and Clarice Williams' house. And she had prayed for someone to come and help Bob. And here was this call. So she called Ann Smith. And unfortunately, Dr. Bob was passed out on the floor. He had gone shopping for a plant for her for Mother's Day. And he and the plant were both potted on the floor in their living room, I believe. Some say it was in the den, in the foyer, not in the living room. I've been in Dr. Bob's house. It's not that big, so he might have been in both areas. She said, well, he can't meet today, so she invited Bill W. over to her house. They had dinner, and she got a promise from Ann Smith that they would meet tomorrow, and she asked Bill if he could stay sober that night, and he said he could, and he went home. The next day, Dr. Bob sobered up, didn't feel very well, obviously, and said he would give this man 15 minutes. And he went and Bill told him about his allergy to the body, how Bill had an obsession of the mind, about his drinking, and about what happened. And he was able, we don't know exactly what took place during those 4 hours, they met for 4 hours, but Dr. Bob said that it was the first time someone had really spoken to him about his problem and he understood the nature of his problem. He had gone to the Oxford group and he had done everything they said. He tried for guidance from God in prayer, but he didn't know what was wrong with himself. He didn't understand his allergy of the body and obsession of the mind. And he thought he was a sinful, weak, immoral person that didn't deserve God's help. And when he understood that he had a disease, he had no power not to drink, then he was able to then do the tenets of the Oxford Group. And you recall that he spent 2 weeks together, and Dr. Bob was doing well and said he had to go to the AMA convention. He went every year and told Bill, don't let him go. He gets drunk every time. But Bill said, you know, we can't keep him locked up. We can't keep him prisoner. He's got to live in the world, and there's alcohol in the world. So, of course, he went to the meeting. He got very sick, got drunk, ended up in Cuyahoga Falls. They found him. He was scheduled to do a very important surgery. It should be noted that Bill W., to be talking nice, was an investor, but he was really a shyster, quick-talking businessman trying to make deals. And Dr. Bob was a rear-end doctor. He was a proctologist. He operated on patients' rectums. And so Dr. Bob had someone's rectum that he had to operate on. We don't know the name of the person who gave the rear end for AA, but he had an important surgery. Bill gave him some beer to drink before he went in. Dr. Bob went to the surgery, and then he did call him and tell him that the surgery was successful, but then he didn't come home. They didn't know where he was. They thought maybe the beer triggered the allergy and he was going to drink. But Dr. Bob actually went around and he admitted that he was an alcoholic to people. He went, made restitution, he made amends, and that humility and that working of the eighth and ninth step was the key, and Dr. Bob never had another drink. And we take AA's beginnings from that day, June 10th, 1935, the day of Dr. Bob's last drink. And so the hand of God, Frank Buckman, went to the church, saw the cross, became an eye, talked about resentment, started the Oxford Group, met Reverend Shoemaker in China, convinced Reverend, exposed Reverend Shoemaker to the Oxford Group. He then came to New York. He was there when Rowan Hazard with the Oxford Group came back from Dr. Young. He was able to sober up Rowan Hazard. They eventually brought him Ebbie Thatcher. Ebbie Thatcher sobered up, went to Bill W. Bill W. went to the Oxford Group, took the steps, went to Akron, and met Dr. Bob, who had been exposed to the Oxford Group in Akron. They met, and then Dr. Bob came sober, and then immediately, Dr. Bob said, if you listen to his talks, the key thing for him, and people need to remember this today, was that he immediately started working with others. He couldn't help but give this away. And of course, Bill W. was driven by the power of God in his life that he couldn't help but keep carrying the message. And so these two people went and they started working with others. Eventually, they started a group in New York. They had one in Akron. After several years, they met in Bill W.'s, in Dr. Bob's house in his kitchen. And they said, we have something. We have something that works. We have 30 or 40 people that were dying of alcoholism who are now sober, who could never have a sober day. And we had months and some year, a year or two of sobriety. And they said, we're going to write this down. We're going to write a book, and we're going to write a book on what we've done and our experience so it could help others. Because they realized there were so many alcoholics that they couldn't work one-on-one with all of them. They had to have a way of getting the message out. And so they decided to write the book. And the book, they made the decision in about 1937. Bill W. wrote There's a Solution, His Story First. He gave those to a publishing company, got an advance of $2,500, which was a lot of money in those days. They eventually needed more money, and they started a company called Works Publishing. Get it? How it works. They called it Works Publishing, and they sold shares for $25. They were planning to sell a lot of the big books to make a lot of money, and then people would get paid back. The book came together, How It Works, the three pages that are read at every meeting, the 12 steps. The story has it, and I've heard Bill W. talk, you can listen to it, that he worked late at night. They needed to start right. They had written the book up to the program of action. They had to write the program of action and figure out how to put it into words. He had originally wanted Reverend Shoemaker to write the steps, but Reverend Shoemaker says it has to be, the program has to come from an alcoholic. And he gave him a lot of guidance. They had a lot of information. But Bill W. said he had a lot of trouble figuring out how to write, how it works, how to start that information. So he prayed late at night. He worked late at night. He said he prayed and he meditated. He had quiet time for 25 minutes. He asked God to direct him and to give him the guidance to write the program. And he says that he took the pen and it just seemed to race across the pages. And in 20 minutes, he wrote the 3 pages of how it works. Now, there have been some minor changes in it, but it's basically as it was written in those 20 or 25 minutes, and it's read at every meeting. They changed some of the wording from you to we and to must and should and suggested instead of this must be your recovery. When I read how it works, I'll read at the next meeting, I'll read the original manuscript and you'll see the differences. They toned it down a bit. And that's how we got the 12 steps. After he wrote it, his friend Hank Parkhurst, who helped was instrumental in helped getting the book put together, came and brought a new guy with him around 12:30, 1 o'clock at night. These people were up all the time. It was a different world then. People were poor. People weren't working. It was right after the Depression, still in recovery from the Great Depression. Hank and his friend said, well, we had 6 steps or so in the Oxford group. Now we have 12. And they said, well, God had 10 commandments. Why do we need 12 steps? And Bill said, well, this is what God told him to do. This is God's will. These are the steps that God gave us. And now we have how it works. The book was published. Initially, they sent cards to all the doctors thinking they would want copies of the book. And they only got 5 replies. From doctors' wives who won the books for their husbands. The book didn't take off till after the famous dinner with Henry Rockefeller in 1941. John Rockefeller, he was a temperate movement. They had a meeting with prominent business leaders, and Rockefeller said, I'm not going to give you money because that'll ruin this thing. But what you have is good. You gave them some money so that they could keep going. And eventually when they heard of the dinner with John Rockefeller, people started to inquire about the book. At the same time, there was a powerful article in the Cleveland paper about one of the first Cleveland members was a famous catcher for the Cleveland Indians, and he sobered up in AA. And then the Saturday Evening Post article really started things going. The Saturday Evening Post heard about this AA and they thought it was a cult. And somehow it's a scheme. And they sent him to write an article and he was their investigative agent. Everybody read the Saturday Evening Post in the 1940s. It came out every week. I remember when I was a kid, it was still very, very popular. I'm old, but in the 50s when I was a little kid, the Saturday Evening Post, Life magazine. The article was very flattering. It was a powerful article. You can read the actual article in Dr. Bob's house. They have it there, and I read it. But basically, he said, this is a very powerful thing. This is a spiritual program. This is the real deal. Their motives are good. They're not out to gain anything. They just want to help each other. And then the book took off. They started to sell about 8,000 copies in the next year or so, and then the war, and it became even more popular, and then AA is here today. So I'm always, it's always, I don't know what the right word is, humbling to realize everything that happened so that I'm here today talking to you about AA history. The people who came to me when I came in, the people who came to them when they came in, the Joe and Charlie, how they spoke to me, how they got sober, Chuck Chamberlain, how he got sober, the hand of God starting through all these events. And so it gives more, it makes it very, at least to me, it's very powerful to see this. There's a review of the big book in Amazon. It's one of the most popular best-selling books, the AA Big Book. But there's a review by the famous philosopher Aldous Huxley, H-U-X-L-E-Y. And he says that in 100 or 200 years, everybody will be reading this book, that these are the spiritual principles for life. And they're going to be studied by everyone on how to find the path to God. And so how many people have been helped by the 12 steps programs? How many lives have been changed? And so Joe and Charlie make the point that God got tired of seeing alcoholics die, and he felt that his message, to the message of the big book, the 12 steps, it would take people like alcoholics who would be desperate enough to do the work of the 12 steps. And he thought we were defeated by our disease and our separation from him, and that we would do these steps to get connected to him and have a relationship with him. And then the whole thing would be that other people would do these steps as well. And these principles would be practiced in everyone's affairs. I've heard it said, I don't know who said it originally, nothing's original. I guess somebody said something originally once, but I've heard that the big book is how, the Bible is how God wants us to be, and the big book is how we get there. And I think that's really true. There's nothing in the big book that contradicts the Bible, and the message in the big book is essentially the message in the Bible. And I would add that one thing I didn't emphasize enough, that to write the big book, the principles, the steps, they took it basically from the Sermon on the Mount, as I mentioned, from the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and from the book of James. And they read Henry Drummond's Love is the Greatest Thing, which is he was an 1800s minister from Scotland. He wrote this book, it's about 1 Corinthians. They put all that information together, and then we have our 12 steps, and we have our textbook on the program of recovery. And it says the purpose of this book is how we develop a relationship with our Creator. And the central fact of the people's lives who wrote the book was that they had a relationship in which their Creator, in which their lives had been changed, and that was the great fact for them. So I hope this information is helpful, and next week we're going to start and look at how it works. If you find these podcasts helpful, please let people know about the site or wherever you were able to obtain the information, experiencethebigbook.org. I would appreciate comments. If you you could follow on Facebook and invite your friends. I'm not a Facebook person, but anything you feel it could help other people to carry this message, one alcoholic helping another. Thank you.